Hello and welcome to the Voice Magazine podcast. My name is Elle and I'm your podcast host. And today we continue the International Women's Day and Women's History Month takeover from all of the women from Voice as we dig deep into representation and stigmatized issues. To begin, we have Ellen, one of our Voice contributors. Can you introduce yourself, please?
Of course. Hi, my name's Ellen Taylor and I'm 21. I'm studying in London at Trinity Laban Conservatory of Music and Dance, and my instrument is classical piano. So that's kind of where my article lies.
And what did you cover in your article?
I've covered kind of two topics. The majority of the article is about how women, or people with small hands, which is mostly women, haven't been considered in the construction and the evolution of the piano, which puts us at a disadvantage. It's just, but obviously, because most pianists are men, it's not really spoken about. And there are alternatives, but they're not like widespread at all. And then the other part, I also bring in a bit about female composers, which they're getting a lot of airtime now, which is great. And obviously they're really included in the music culture, but they still have obstacles. So I've just written a bit about that.
Let's start at the beginning. Can you explain the hand size thing to us?
Yes, I can. So I have small hands and I can reach...
Me too, yeah.
I can reach a ninth on a piano, and like it's kind of measured... The piano is kind of measured by octaves, and I can reach an octave, and that's an eighth. So I can reach a ninth, but most men can reach like, it's actually kind of sad. Most men can reach like an 11th or a 12th. And it just means that the composers, who are mostly men, would also have been able to reach those keys. So any chords that are written like that, the men can play and I can't. There's a difference, and I mentioned an article which states that on average men have an extra distance of 2 centimetres underneath in their hand span, which is really a lot. So, because if you can't reach, you can't reach, and you have to get around it.
Yeah, so you said, you know, your instrument to go to as well as a piano. How do you manage this?
So there are some composers which I do just kind of avoid, which is quite sad. Liszt, Rachmaninoff. But when I do come across, I sometimes do play their pieces, not Liszt, Rachmaninoff, or another composer. There are different techniques you can do. You can split the notes, so literally just play them one after another, normally going from the lower register to the upper register. You can spread the notes. That's if there's like maybe more notes in a chord, like four, you'd spread them, which is just playing one after another from low to high. And also you can miss out notes, which I've been advised to do a lot. And also the notes that you miss out are ones that are maybe doubled elsewhere in the bar or in the chord. So it's not changing the harmony or anything. And then the other thing is you can put a note that might have been in the left hand, you can just play it with the right hand instead, if the right hand happens to be in the right place.
Do you think this has put you like at a disadvantage compared to the men who can just play these, or like people with larger hands who can just play these songs without skipping notes? Do you think there's disadvantages in the community?
Yeah, definitely, because I've also had to employ different techniques, learn different techniques, harder techniques, which is just harder to execute when you perform. It's more likely to go wrong. If you just play, if you can play the notes as they're written at the same time, it's not going to go wrong. Whereas if you've got to be jumping around because you can't reach the notes, it might go wrong and you might miss the notes.
This is completely an issue that I haven't heard about. I quite enjoy music and it's something that's definitely not spoken about. So it would be interesting to hear from you, you know, what I suppose made you really consider this as well.
Yeah, well, I hadn't considered it. I've been playing piano for 15 years and I hadn't considered it until I went to a small hands piano workshop, and the professor had these model keyboards of what a smaller keyboard could be like, and it fitted my hand, and it was great. And also, if you think about cello and guitar and harp, the tuba, they all have smaller versions of the instrument. And it's not also just to benefit women, of course, or people with small hands, it's to benefit children, but it's beneficial for those that need it. And it's just puzzling that the piano has not been included in that.
Do you think there will be a future with these mini pianos?
Yes, I think there will, because they have been invented to men, ironically, but one of the men, the concert pianist, he had small hands. So it's not just something that benefits women, but mostly it would benefit women. They've invented what they call the DS, and then there's the DS 5.1, the DS 5.5, and the number refers to the number of inches that makes up the octave. So normally it's 6.5 inches that makes up the octave, which is the 8 notes. And then so with this keyboard, it would be 5.1 inches or 5.5 inches. And that was invented in the 1990s, and it's never seen one. I've never heard of one until
writing this. I've never heard of this, yeah.
Yeah.
How did you come across this?
Well, I knew that they were a thing because of this workshop, and we had a model, and I just went online and typed in piano keyboards with small hands and came up and found that they do exist, but not in England, it seems.
You think it would be so much easier for children to learn? Because I know the struggle when you're a child, you can maybe reach 4 or 5 keys.
Yeah, and I spent the entire time growing up being told, you can't play this, you can't play that, your hand's too small. So it's not even just about being a woman, it's also about being just somebody with small hands.
Yeah, completely. I remember for me, I had to go through these hand stretching exercises to try and make my little finger and my thumb as far apart as they can be to try and do it. And it seems so silly that there's solutions out there.
Yeah, but they're just not being employed.
And what do you think? So you mentioned as well about composers.
Yeah, so obviously female composers I know plenty studying at music college, and that's great, but their paths are not easy. Still, they still face inequalities. So I wrote about a young female composer called Alma Deutscher, and she's fantastic. She was born in the UK, and now she lives in Vienna, and she's played at Carnegie Hall and written her own piano concertos and operas and things.
Wow, that's very impressive.
Yeah. She's a prodigy, and she also plays violin and piano amazingly. But she, in a lot of the articles about her, she's called a mini Mozart. And I don't like, I mean, yeah, it's an amazing accolade.
Yeah, why do we need the comparison? Wow, she's so successful in her own right. Obviously,
yeah, exactly. Yeah, she's so successful in her own right. Why does Mozart need to be a part of it?
Yeah, I completely see that.
Yeah, so I just wrote a little bit about that. And then also about the most recent update to the A-level music syllabus, which included omitting one of the 5 female composers that I would have studied. So I studied A-level music. So I also wrote about female composers in education. And how students haven't really had the opportunity to learn from them. Like at GCSE, there was 1 female composer out of 12 composers. And then at A-level, there was 5 out of 18. So I started off with a bit more hope. But recently, because of the pandemic, they wanted to lessen the workload for the students. So they cut out some of the composers. And they cut out 1 of the female composers and also the only black composer on the syllabus, which there was already 5 female composers, so it's 4. But there was just so many white male composers that they could have cut out, and there still would have been 12 left. So it's just a bit unfair, really.
Yeah, I definitely think there's a difference, you know.
Yeah.
When people think of the people who play the piano, it is typically a lot of men who come to mind. And obviously, if that's what's happening in the education, people aren't necessarily learning otherwise. Do you think there is a difference between the composed pieces? So when you talk about the hand size as well, do the women composers create more pieces that are able to be played with small hands?
I would say so, yeah. Like, there's a composer, Clara Schumann. She's probably the most famous female composer. And her pieces, they are suitable for my hand size anyway. Going on from that, I've actually started learning my first piece by a female composer, which I'm feeling really proud of, but it's also a shame because I've been learning piano for 15 years and I'm only now playing a piece by a female composer.
It's great to hear that you're branching out into it.
Yeah, it just feels really, I don't know, I just feel more of a connection with the music in a way. I just feel really connected to it. I really love playing it.
I have one more question before we go off. What would you recommend to maybe any young aspiring women out there wanting to play the piano? Is there something you would take from this journey and maybe relay to them?
I think it's finding your inspiration, because there is always somebody out there, even if they're harder to find. There's always someone out there that can inspire you and show you that you are capable and you are worthy of learning an instrument. So I'd also like to say a few female pianists that really inspire me. Not that I can say their names. Their names are, they're too, like, I'm not good at international names, but my favourite pianist is Helen Grimold, and she's a French pianist. And I think her playing is just so authentic. And I went to see her in Germany and it was like the best concert I've ever been to, just because also she played pieces that she loves. She wasn't trying to show off. There wasn't any of the thrashing around at the piano. She just played pieces she loved in the way that she loved. And then also Martha Argerich, who is probably the most famous female pianist. She's often referred to as the queen of piano. She's like 88 now, and she's still doing concerts. And she's incredible. She's really, really incredible. I've been to watch her, and I just feel so inspired, and I just can't wait to sit back down at the piano and keep playing. And also Yuja Wang, who's very famous as well. She's a bit more of a show pianist, but she's got so much confidence. I think that's the thing with her. She's so confident in what she does, and she doesn't let anything sway her, because there's a lot of controversy surrounding the clothes that she wears for her concerts, but she just doesn't let it affect her. And she just,
what are those clothes?
She just wears sometimes quite small dresses, but I don't think it should matter. She's like, you're there for the music. And I think it's part of her image.
Yeah, you know, I mean, I think it's almost silly, I suppose, that perhaps like a woman in a classical background might obviously get comments about it. But if you look at every pop star, you know, they also get away, I suppose, with wearing whatever kind of they choose, or, you know, wild costume designs as well.
Yeah, I mean, it's probably mostly male critics who dislike it. And I think it's probably to do with empowerment. She's empowered by her music, and she's empowered by her body. And that's a great thing.
It is. It's something we definitely need to encourage.
Yeah.
It's something I'd like to see more of, yeah, as well.
So I've included a couple of videos in my article. I haven't quite decided which ones I want to put in, but definitely one with Yuja Wang. There's a video where she just, I think her kind of playing is so encompassed in that video, just the confidence and the assurance. And also Martha Argerich playing piano concerto back in 1977, I wanted to include, and possibly something from Alma Deutscher as well.
I appreciate that there's so much like female inspiration here as well.
Yeah.
So thank you, Ellen, for coming to talk to us about your article.
Yeah, so I would also like to say that although this is a problem in my life, I know it's a really privileged problem, particularly the small hands thing, because I know that so many people don't have the opportunity to learn the piano and be trained in the way that I have been.
But I do think as well, you know, why is it a problem if we do have the solution? And yeah. I think it's so easy for something to be swept under the carpet, but we have the solution.
Yeah, that's a really good point. So hopefully I can bring a bit of awareness to this.
I know for me, I've played myself and I've definitely never thought about what if there was just a smaller piano. So hopefully that will help open up some minds out there as well.
Yeah. Thank you so much for having me. I really enjoyed it.
Today we're here with Rosie.
Hi, I'm Rosie. I joined Voice in January, which is so great. I'm having the best time. I'm going to be mainly writing about music and drama, the arts, the more classical arts, classical music, opera, ballet, all that kind of stuff. And how it kind of influences us today. I studied at the University of Manchester, studying music and drama, so that's kind of obviously what I wanted to focus on. But for this International Women's Day, I'm really focusing on femininity and how we can all embrace that.
And how can we all embrace it?
Oh.
Would you like to talk more about your article?
Yes. I mean, I've decided that this is going to be part of a series now, because it's such a wide topic and it's something that I really want people to be talking about more, really. So what I want to talk about is that there is no one way for a woman to express herself or express her strength. The main reference point I use is Legally Blonde and how, you know, because she was this girly girl, she loved pink, she had big bouncy blonde hair, she was a fashion major, and for some reason, you know, her having the desire to go to Harvard Law was so surprising to people, and it took her a lot more work to be taken seriously by everyone. And it's kind of a running theme throughout the film, you know, she needs to work a lot harder to be taken seriously and to kind of be considered as, you know, an intelligent person, an intelligent, capable person. And I obviously, I'm aware it's a comedy, but I think comedies, they are the best commentators on how we function as a society, because it's so on the nose and it's so subtly done. And I think it's my best point of reference, really. But obviously, as we go forward, I definitely want to branch into how all types of, not just women, just how all types of people can embrace their more feminine side, you know, regardless of background, regardless of body type, regardless of budget, you know. So I think it'll be really fun to do some more articles on and maybe get some other people involved as well.
Yeah, I'm sure so many women listening can relate to the Legally Blonde effect that you've mentioned as well. Have you had any experiences such as that?
In school, I loved my kind of girly fashion. I loved to wear pink. I loved to, you know, wear little dresses and little girly things. And I guess it's hard to know why people find problem with that. And that's something that I've been kind of asking myself since I started to get comments and stuff. People tended to kind of see me as... A traitor is a very strong word, but definitely someone who wasn't on their side, someone who was trying to get some sort of attention or some sort of validation from the guys at school. And I just wanted to make it so clear that it had nothing, my dress sense, my style, my mannerisms or whatever, my interests, really had nothing to do with the boys, the men, you know, around me. It had nothing to do with men at all. It was just the way I chose to express myself. And I think, you know, when I was doing well in school or I was doing well in subjects and we were all getting our grades, sometimes people would act kind of surprised and be like, oh, I wouldn't have expected you to do so well in this subject or this subject. And I'm like, well, why?
I can 100% agree. I can relate, yeah.
And it's just, it's kind of soul crushing, you know?
I agree about the soul crushing part. I've experienced it even, you know, after university. I had so many people assume I studied fashion, or just because I like fashion and clothing. Mm. I had so many people surprised I got a good grade.
It's just trying to, it's this constant need to kind of prove oneself, to prove that you're as capable as everyone else. And I just think, yes, it is soul crushing, and it is really kind of exhausting, but it is really interesting to talk about, because, you know, if we keep going along with this idea that femininity has connotations of weakness or whatever, it just kind of reinstates this idea that masculinity is better, that masculinity is stronger, and all this kind of stuff. And I mentioned a TED talk by Michelle Miller. She's amazing. And she said that, you know, masculinity and femininity, they're just qualities, they're languages, and they're present in everyone. But as a huge generalization, they tend to, you know, balance more heavily depending on, you know, sex. So I think it's really interesting to talk about as a concept more broadly, you know, rather than just trying to kind of use it as a competition, as you know, to see which one's better, because there is, you know, there's no better quality. It's about finding strength in each one of them and getting them to work together. I think it's really important that people are talking about it, I think, personally.
What do you think the future is? What do you think the solution to this is?
The solution, I think, with so many things, it has to start when you're young. It really has to. And I think it's hard because often, you know, you'll have parents, grandparents, whatever, who are kind of set in their ways. And I know that even my grandparents, you know, when I was talking about what we're learning at school, and they're like, oh God, everything's just changing. You know, everything's so much more complicated than it was back in my day. And that kind of instills the idea that what we're doing is kind of unimportant, or, you know, like woke or whatever. But it's really important, and it's important that people are even just aware, and there's no stigmatizing of anything, you know. It's important that kids are taught at a young age that, you know, you can be anything, and there doesn't need to be any sense of, you know, proving oneself. You know, I think that that's definitely with the girly girls. I think there is a need to prove ourselves, you know, to show that, yeah, I wear pink, or I like to wear summer dresses, or I like to do ballet, or I like to listen to this kind of music, or I have these kind of hobbies. I like to sew, I like to bake, whatever. That, you know, these are just hobbies that we have. This is how we like to express ourselves. There is no better or worse way to live your life, to express yourself. You know, there shouldn't be this stigma from such a young age.
You know, I think, funnily enough, Barbie gets so much hate from people for, you know, her slogan is be who you want to be. We've seen Barbie be an astronaut, doctor, yeah, you know, construction worker, fashion diva.
She is running that. She's running all
that. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I remember watching Fairytopia, of all things. It's a blast film. And at the end, it was, there's a, you know, a little slogan. She has her slogans. And one of them is what makes you different makes you special. You know, I remember watching one of the more modern ones, that, you know, the recent ones that was made. And she was a waitress or something. And she likes to read her books. And in her books, there's this princess in a dress and she's fighting off the dragon. And I thought, you now can't say that Barbie isn't, you know, empowering the girls.
Yeah. And for you, what does being a woman mean to you?
Being a woman to me, obviously, femininity is a huge part of how I, you know, how I enjoy to live my life. But, you know, taking things into consideration, I am so lucky that I am in a position to really enjoy and have fun being a woman, you know, because I'm so privileged, you know, living in England, being a white woman living in England in the 21st century, having access to, you know, sanitary products and being able to go to school, being able to, you know, do interviews without too much initial, you know, judgment. And I think that's a very, very fortunate position to be in. And I think as a result of, you know, educating myself and, you know, just getting a wider view of the world as I'm, you know, growing up, I think being a woman for me is not taking anything for granted. And it's having this sisterhood, you know, with all my fellow women, which I think does have the risk of being lost, I feel, because of social media and competition and so many factors. But I think that having this sisterhood is something that is so, so special about being a woman. And I think, you know, girls supporting girls, again, it can all be taught at such a young age. I think it can be something really, really wonderful. And I hope that it's encouraged, you know, girls supporting girls.
That was such a wholesome answer.
Thank you.
But especially the part where, you know, what it means to be a woman, like here in England, so different to other countries. And that's definitely something to be appreciative for as well, which your answer reminded me of.
Exactly. You know, it's so hard for so many people. And I think to be able to educate ourselves about that and to be able to, you know, understand how we can make a difference and how we can appreciate the small things in our own lives, I think it is just such good steps to be taking.
And if any of the viewers wanted to find you online, where would they find you?
So I have a more musical inspired Facebook page and Instagram, which will be insights.rosalieamos. My full name is Rosalie. It's R-O-S-A-L-I-E-A-M-O-S. That's just where I like to just kind of talk about things that, you know, make me happy and things that I, you know, I'm curious about. That's my kind of my focus. It's staying curious and, you know, always wanting to find more things out about music and drama, obviously, specifically, and how they influence us and how we can express ourselves through it. And just having a bit of fun. So I think that would be great if anyone's interested. And obviously my voice, which is Rosie Amos, will be talking a little more in depth and research wise as well. So that's where I'm currently at this point in time. Thank you so much for having me. It's been lovely.
Thank you for joining us. Thank you for listening to today's podcast. Today's episode was made possible by Voice Magazine, an online platform for young people interested in art and culture. You can read Voice over at voicemag.uk and find it on Twitter, Instagram and Facebook as VoiceMagUK. The Voice contributors are also on Instagram over at voice.extra. If you are looking for another podcast to listen to, the contributors release the Voice Extra podcast every Saturday, where they talk about the pieces they've produced and the culture they've been enjoying. If you enjoyed this podcast, please consider helping us to make more with a donation of any amount at voicemag.uk/donate. Thanks to Kevin MacLeod for the use of the track Thief in the Night. You can find more of his work on incomputech.com. L. Farrell Kingsley was a sound engineer and producer. Saskia Kaliste and Tom Innes were the executive producers.